And so, my boy, I strongly advise you that if for any reason you have to exist among them, always pretend that you wish to learn something from them. Act in the same way toward their children, and you will then not only be on excellent terms with them all, but the whole family will look on you as the most honored friend of the house. Always remember that because of the self-conceit flowing from this particular property, any one of them, however insignificant he may be in essence, looks down with contempt upon the attitudes and conduct of others, especially if their attitudes and conduct sharply contradicts his own subjective views. And in these cases, as I have just said, he usually becomes inwardly sincerely offended and indignant. I might as well remark here that this property of your favorites, of always growing indignant at the defect of others around them, makes their own existence, already wretched and abnormal without this, objectively unbearable. Because of this constant indignation, the ordinary being existence of these unfortunates almost always flows, accompanied by unproductive moral sufferings. And these futile moral sufferings of theirs usually continue by momentum to act for a long time on their psyche, sectionally, or, as they would say on your planet, oppressively. In other words, they ultimately become instuarnian, or nervous, of course without the participation of their consciousness. And then, in the process of their ordinary being existence, they become completely uncontrolled. Even in the being manifestations which have nothing to do with the primary causes of the instuarness or nervousness of theirs. And it is just this property of being indignant at the defects of others that has gradually made their existence arch-tragicomic. For instance, at every step there, you can see a picture of this sort. One of these freaks, having lost the only thing they acquire from their maleficent education, which they call a mask, behind which they cunningly hide from others their obvious inner and outer defects, has fallen, as they say, completely under somebody's thumb. Well then, this being who is under the thumb of his wife or his mistress, or of somebody else who has ferreted out his inner insignificance, and has become the slave of one of these patrons to the point of humiliation, waxes more indignant than anyone if some king, for some reason or other, is unable to keep tens or hundreds of thousands of his subjects under control. And oddly enough, it is precisely such terrestrial humbugs under somebody's thumb who usually write all sorts of manuals expounding in detail what must be done to govern others well. Or again, if one of these contemporary beings, whose heart always sinks into his boots when a mouse runs past him, learns that so-and-so was a bit scared on meeting a tiger, this hero will be filled with indignation against him and, foaming at the mouth, will not fail to denounce him to his friends, proving that he is a criminal coward for having been frightened by a mere tiger. And here again, the various books and manuals concerning what must be done and how, and what must not be done on meeting a tiger or other such being, are written by these mouse-flinching heroes. Or further, one of these beings who has collected a score of chronic diseases so that his stomach does not work for weeks at a stretch, and his whole body is covered with every kind of loathsome pimple, from all of which he naturally suffers day and night. In short, a being who for many years has been a genuine walking anatomical museum of all the diseases existing on that planet, is always more indignant than anyone else when someone is careless enough to catch, let us say, a cold in the head. And these walking anatomical museums invariably instruct others with great authority on how to get rid of such a cold. And it is they who write all sorts of books and manuals on the multitude of diseases there and expound in minute detail their prevention and cure. At every step, one can observe an absurdity of this kind. One of them who does not have the slightest idea what the ordinary tiny being called flea, which often bites him, really looks like, writes a huge volume or organizes public lectures, as they are called, to explain that the flea, whose bite caused a swelling on the neck of a certain king, known in history as King Naukan, had on its left paw an abnormal orange-crimson growth of a very odd form. Well then, this flea expert, who writes his voluminous work about the orange-crimson growth on the flea whose bite caused King Naukan's venerable neck to swell, or spends a whole evening lecturing on this subject, will not only be offended, but even greatly indignant, if anyone expresses doubts to his face. And he will be indignant, chiefly because this person is such an ignoramus that he has never even heard about the truths communicated by this expert. To satisfy that astonishingly strange psycho-organic need to teach others, your favorites, in order not to suffer, must always have at least one victim for instruction. But in those who, for some reason or other, have acquired a certain authority in these manifestations, and who by prolonged habit have become more brazen, the appetite grows and requires an always greater number of these victims. And so, my boy, if a normal being existing there were to observe such pictures that are met with at every step and seriously ponder his own perceptions, he might acquire full knowledge of all branches of objective science. Moreover, if one day you should ever happen to exist among them and witness these incongruous being manifestations, you will be unable, in spite of knowing their cause, to keep from laughing inwardly. At the same time, you will pity these unfortunates with the whole of your being, and your inner laughter will gradually be suffused with what is called essence Parnassurian grief. This property of the psyche of the three-centered beings there is especially strongly developed among the beings belonging to the caste called the intelligentsia. The word intelligentsia comes very close to the idea we define by the expression force in oneself. Although in its essence the word intelligentsia has had this meaning for centuries, your contemporary favorites, without the slightest embarrassment, use it to designate those beings who are the exact opposite of what the word denotes. The word intelligentsia is taken from the ancient Greek language. It is interesting to note that this word was also used by the ancient Romans, who, having borrowed it from the Greeks, not for its sense but for its sound, later imagined that its root belonged to their own language. But among the ancient Greeks, this word denoted being so perfected that they could direct their functions by their own will, unlike non-spiritualized cosmic formations whose actions are only reactions to external causes. It is true that one still meets beings on your planet who correspond approximately to the real meaning of this word, but only among beings regarded as not intelligent. In my opinion, if the beings who are now called the intelligentsia were simply called the mechanogentsia, this would perhaps be more correct. And it would be more correct not only because the contemporary intelligentsia can give absolutely no direction at all to their being functions, but also because there are already completely atrophied in them even those data for impulses of essence initiative for daily being existence, which great nature always puts in all three centered beings at their arising. During their responsible existence, these beings belonging to the intelligentsia manifest themselves, that is to say, act automatically, only on receiving accidental or intentional shocks from outside. And it is only these external shocks that animate them and bring them corresponding experiences. Thanks to the unrolling of a series of associations linked with accidental automatic impressions already perceived by them and not depending at all on their own wish or will. These external shocks usually come, in the first place, from animate or inanimate objects that accidentally enter the field of perception of their visual organs. Second, from all sorts of beings they meet. Third, from the sounds or words reverberating where they happen to be. Fourth, from odors accidentally perceived by their sense of smell. And finally, from unaccustomed sensations experienced by them from time to time in the functioning of their planetary body, or as they say, their organism, and so on. But never do their outer manifestations or the inner being impulses that ought to be under the direction of their being I proceed according to their own wish arising from their entire presence. I must tell you further that for various reasons, some of those terrestrial beings belonging to the intelligentsia, whose psychic manifestations have undergone definite changes in the course of their responsible existence, are no longer called intelligentsia by other terrestrial beings, but are given different names composed of different words, or more exactly, roots of words taken from the ancient Greek, such as bureaucrats, plutocrats, theocrats, democrats, zevrocrats, aristocrats, and so on. The first of these names, that is, bureaucrat, is given to the beings of the intelligentsia in whom the series of automatic associations already present in them and which engender definite experiencings are limited in number. That is, however varied the shocks coming from outside may be, they always evoke in these bureaucrats associations of the same experiencings, which, thanks to frequent repetition, acquire their own specific character and manifest themselves quite independently without the participation of any of the separate spiritualized being parts of their common presence. And as for the second of these names, that is, plutocrat, this is applied to those beings of the intelligentsia who also, after a certain transformation of their psyche, very artistically succeed during the period of their responsible existence in getting into their toils all the honest, that is, naive fellow countrymen they encounter, with the result that they become the owners of a large quantity of what are called money and slaves. Bear in mind in this connection that it is from just these terrestrial types that most chasnamous individuals arise. During my sojourn on the planet Earth, while investigating the questions that interested me, I chanced to learn the secret of the origin of this word, plutocrat. As I have already told you, for the last 25 centuries, every dubious notion and every suspicious thing there, for some reason or other, has been called by an ancient Greek word. Thus, these names also, such as bureaucrat, aristocrat, democrat, and so on, which express dubious notions, are composed of two ancient Greek words. The word bureaucrat, for instance, consists of two words, bureau, which means office, and krat, which means to keep or to hold. And together these words mean those who keep or manage the whole office. And as regards the word plutocrat, it seems that the history of its origin is somewhat different and does not go back very far. This word was formed only 7 or 8 of their centuries ago. Although these types also existed in ancient Greece, they were then called plusiocrats. Several centuries ago, however, when beings of this type had multiplied, and it became clear that the other beings of the earth had to exalt them with some sort of title, certain of those who at that time were in charge of such questions invented for them the name of plutocrat. It seems that they deliberated and pondered a long time before adopting this name, because they understood very well that these types on their planet are scoundrels of the deepest dye and are, so to speak, saturated to the marrow of their bones with every kind of husnamussery, and therefore a name had to be found that would fit them to perfection. At first, these beings in charge wished to exalt them with some title corresponding to their inner significance. But on reflection, they were afraid to do this, because these terrestrial types, thanks to their ill-gotten gains, had acquired force and power, perhaps greater than that of their kings. So they were afraid that if they exalted them by a title that would indicate their real significance, they would be deeply offended and begin to do still more harm to those around them. So in the end, they decided to be cunning and invented a word thanks to which they could call them by their real name, yet at the same time appear to do them honor. They achieved this in the following way. As the title for these terrestrial types had, of course, to be composed of 2 ancient Greek words, and as all such names end with the Greek word krat, they left this ancient Greek syllable as the second half, in order that the new word might not be too obvious. The first half of this word, however, was not taken from the ancient Greek, as was usually done, but from the Russian language. They took the word plut, which in Russian means rogue, and thus obtained plutocrat. These wise terrestrial beings indeed attained their aim to perfection, because at the present time, everyone is quite satisfied with this title, these parasites themselves, as well as all the other beings of the earth. Indeed, these terrestrial monsters are so satisfied with their title that they swagger about in top hats, even on weekdays. And the other terrestrial beings are also satisfied, because they call these monsters by their real name, not only without making them angry, but even causing them to strut like turkey cocks. As regards the third of the names I enumerated, that is theocrat, this title designates those members of the intelligentsia in whose common presence there occurs almost the same perturbation in the psycho-organic sense as in those who become plutocrats. The only difference between the plutocrats and the theocrats is that to satisfy their husnamussian needs, the former act upon those around them through the function they call trust, while the latter act upon the function which in your favorites has gradually replaced the sacred function that serves all the 3 brain beings as one of the 3 sacred paths for self-perfecting. That is to say, faith. To give you a better idea of the difference between these theocrats and plutocrats, it will be enough to quote another saying of our highly esteemed Mullah Nasruddin. While speaking one day of the many forms of authority which influence man's psyche, suddenly, without rhyme or reason, he said, "What does it matter to the poor flies how they are killed? By a kick from the hoof of a horned devil or the brush of the beautiful wings of a divine angel?" As for the terrestrial types, whom all the others call Democrats, I must tell you that they do not always come from the intelligentsia by heredity. Most of them start out as simple, ordinary beings, and only later, having insinuated themselves by some tour de force into that class, are they transformed into Democrats. During the process of their transformation, the degeneration of the functions issuing from the sacred function of conscience brings about almost the same results in them as in the plutocrats and theocrats. Here, it might as well be remarked that when some of these Democrats, for one reason or another, happen to occupy the posts of power-possessing beings, their actions sometimes produce a very rare cosmic phenomenon. As Mullah Nasser Eddin says, the very corns turn into podiatrists. This rare phenomenon occurs, in my opinion, because the Democrats who chance to occupy the posts of power-possessing beings have no inherited aptitude for knowing instinctively how to govern others, and are consequently quite unable to direct the existence of beings who happen to be under their authority. As regards these terrestrial types, our priceless teacher, Mullah Nasser Eddin, has another appropriate saying. Each time he recites it, he first raises his arms to heaven, and only then with great reverence intones, "Praise be to thee, our great and just Creator, that by thy infinite and just grace it is ordained that cows do not fly like pretty little birds." And now, my boy, from the various categories of intelligentsia I enumerated, it remains for me to tell you about those whom the other beings there call zevocrats and aristocrats. To distinguish them, they are given nicknames such as emir, count, Khan, Prince, Malik, Baron, and so on, which for some reason or other resound most pleasantly on that function of your favorites, which expresses itself very strongly in them up to the moment of their death, and which is called vanity. I must frankly confess that it is difficult to give you a complete explanation of these types there, not only in ordinary speech, but even in the language of our wise Mullah Nasser Eddin. The most we can say of them is that they are simply jokes of nature. To tell the truth, although your favorites give them different names, the aristocrats and zevocrats are similar in every respect and have exactly identical inner properties. Do you remember that I already told you how in the different communities on your planet there exist two kinds of state organization, one called monarchic and the other republican? In communities where a republican state organization exists, these types are called zevocrats, whereas in a monarchic state organization, they are called aristocrats. To give you at least some notion concerning these two terrestrial types, I think it will be best if I tell you about my astonishment every time I happen to meet one of these misunderstandings on your planet. Above all, I wondered how this terrestrial three-brain type could exist on your peculiar planet almost as long as the other three-brain beings there. To be sure, I had already asked myself this question about the beings who belong to the caste of the bureaucrats. Yet in their case, I could still explain it more or less satisfactorily. Although their series of experiencings are also very limited, at least they do actually have them at all times of day and night. But according to my observations, all the material of experience of these aristocrats and zevocrats is limited to three series. The first concerns the question of food. The second consists of the recollections associated with the past functioning of their sex organs. And the third relates to memories of their first nurse. And how could beings whose only material of experience is limited to these three series of impressions have the same length of existence as that of other beings on the surface of your planet? This will always be an insoluble riddle for me. It is said that in facing this puzzling question of how these terrestrial types managed to exist so long, our arch-cunning Lucifer once grew very thoughtful, and he thought about it so hard that all the hairs on the tip of his tail turned quite gray. As regards those jokes of nature, as I call them, it only remains for me to try to explain why there is such a striking difference in the names given to one and the same kind of being. I said try, because I myself do not know the exact cause. Yet knowing the roots of the two words from which these names were formed, I think I can assume with certainty that this difference resulted from a particular custom existing there. I must tell you that your favorites, for some reason or other, are very fond of putting on what are called puppet shows. And for some reason or other, they also like to have zebrocrats or aristocrats take part in these puppet plays of theirs. And accordingly, they always drag them into these puppet shows. But as these beings are in themselves quite vacuous and therefore feeble, other beings of the community have to support them during these puppet shows. And it is simply from the method of support, that is, according to the arm by which they are held up, that the difference in name was obtained. In the communities where a monarchic state organization exists, it has long been the custom to support them with the right arm, and hence in these communities, such types are called aristocrats. And on the contrary, in the communities where a republican state organization exists, they are supported with the left arm, and hence are called zevrocrats. Concerning such differences in the names of terrestrial beings, some wise remarks of our esteemed Mulla Nasr Eddin come to my mind. One day, we were speaking about the difference between the judgments rendered by the Turkish kadis, or magistrates, and the Persian ones. Concerning the similarity of their ideas of justice, he said, "Eh, my dear friend, is there such a thing anywhere on the earth as a wise legal examination of a man's guilt? The kadis are the same everywhere, only their names are different. In Persia, they are called Persian, in Turkey, Turkish, and that is just how it is everywhere on the earth. Donkeys are all alike, they only have different names. For instance, the kind of donkey breeding in the Caucasus is called Karabakhian, and the same kind of donkey in Turkestan is called Khorasanian." These wise words of his were imprinted on my brain, and during my existence on your planet, I always remembered them whenever I had any comparison to make. May his name be praised forever on that planet where he arose and was formed. And so, my boy, I repeat once more, if for some reason or other you have to be on their planet, always bear in mind that the weakness I told you about is most strongly developed in the ordinary beings of the intelligentsia there, and particularly in those among them who belong to one or another of the castes I have mentioned with names ending in Krat.